down for the first place Cubs, who only lead the division by one right now over the Reds. Again, 5:30 on your Tuesday. Time for the Mully and Haw Show right now, 670 The Score.
Yeah, we're done.
Wake up! Wake up!
Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
What letter grade would you give the Bears for their 8-player draft, and what is your projected record?
My projected record for the Bears is 9-8 right now. I want to be fair with this draft, evaluating it, because I think grades are very difficult to give out. B- because I feel like there's too much curiosity and a little much creativity and not enough sure things.
David, I tell you this, man. We're going to do things that we trust our players to do.
I would say if I had to give them a grade, I would probably give them a B, because everybody gets a B because everybody had a big win. I'm with you, David. I think they have to have a winning season. I think that we've seen enough losing. I think the way they lost last year was because of mismanagement, and I expect them to be a better football team.
We might have just turned up the notch just a couple of dials.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
I'm all on board.
Let's go.
Good morning, Chicago. Welcome into the Mully and Haw Show, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I'm David Haw, along with Ruthie Polinsky, in for Mully today. Good morning, Ruthie.
Good morning, David.
My co-host over at the Chicago Sports Network for the Big Pro Football Show. We'll be doing that tonight. We'll be doing that from a baseball stadium.
Yeah.
How about that? This is our first foray into the Rate, 35th and Shields. The Sox host the Brewers. And because of the logistics and because of the really cool studio on the fourth level there at the Rate, we are going to do the Chicago Lead there tonight. We're going to do the Big Pro Football Show there tonight. And then they're going to do, obviously, the Sox, White Sox pregame live with Ozzie and Chuck.
Yeah, I'm excited. I love a baseball stadium. It's going to be maybe a little quiet for us when we're there, but that's okay.
That's okay.
We're doing a football show from a baseball stadium. You know, I think it's cool. I think the Chicago Sports Network, I think people are aware that we are the White Sox, home of the White Sox, right?
Yeah.
So it makes sense that our shoulder programming would have sort of a sports setting
to
it. No
doubt about it. Yeah.
It's
nice
cool.
Little pregame atmosphere.
It's a beautiful studio.
It is a cool studio, and it's a nice little setup out there. So that is later today. But you are kind enough to get up early to fill in for Mully, because we have a lot of things going on this morning. Brian Cole is from Rush Midwest Orthopedics, and he is a surgeon, and he did the surgery on Lonzo Ball and Gabriel Landeskog. And if you wonder, who is that guy? Okay, hockey fans, we're going to talk a little hockey here, because Gabriel Landeskog is a great story. He had the same surgery done that Lonzo Ball had done, and Dr. Brian Cole did both surgeries, and Landeskog scored. He's playing for the Avs in the Western Conference NHL playoffs, and that series is 3-2. The Stars won last night, but Landeskog is playing for the first time in, wait for it, 3 years.
Mm.
3 years. So it's quite a story. We'll talk to him at 7:25.
So excited.
Bill O'Brien, the coach at Boston College, who is the head coach for Ozzie Tripillo, who was a second-round draft pick, offensive tackle. We'll get into what we expect from him, but Bill O'Brien will help us understand more at 7:45. Dan Weider, 8:15. Mike Florio at 8:45. John Heyman at 9 o'clock. We have a jam-packed show.
Lots of great voices on our show today. A lot of experts, a lot of people who can shed a lot of light. I'm really looking forward to talking with Dr. Brian Cole. I mean, this man's a hero.
He is.
He's a hero.
He's viewed by, like that, certainly Lonzo Ball's camp looks at him that way, I believe. And I know Gabriel Landeskog had him out, or he was at the game last Thursday night when they he made the return for the first time in 3 years. So that is heroic what he did, no doubt about it. And it was groundbreaking surgery, and is certainly something that we're glad to have him on to talk about. We also will be reviewing the draft some more, because we're sifting through some things. The rookie minicamp doesn't start until next week. This is the NFL portion of the season that and the calendar where you start to assess exactly what each team has, because you can now put the draft into context with free agency and start to look ahead. Now, the Bears still might not be done. We'll talk about some of those possibilities with the running back slot and some other things. But the draft class as a whole, I think what we heard yesterday was what you typically hear on the Monday after a draft. Some people were very satisfied and happy with the with what Ryan Poles and Ben Johnson accomplished, and some people were somewhat, I don't want to say critical, but they...
Yeah, critical.
There were some critiques out there that are a little sharper than others, but certainly looking at what the Bears didn't have more than what they do now.
Some people, like Dan Wiederer, who I heard him on the midday show, he was a shoulder shrug. I think that's how he explained it when he left Hallis Hall on Saturday. There's a lot there, and I'm sure I'll mention this many times over the course of the morning, as I've mentioned to you many times. I'm a big... I can't grade the draft gal. You know, I'm just one of those people that I'm not going to sit here and make these grand declarations about what job Ryan Poles and his front office did
you would
over
like
the course
to
of 3 days.
Fast forward the calendar and
Four
say
years,
that it's
three
April
years.
29th, 2027.
I mean, David, when you think about it, we don't know yet if Tyreek Stevenson was a good draft pick. We don't know if Jaquan Brisker was a good draft pick. There are so many people that Ryan Poles has drafted that I think until they get a second contract or they ride off into the sunset onto another team,
right,
we don't know if they hit until we know.
I'm not going to dispute that because you can't, but how do you explain then why NFL teams really don't take that kind of patient approach in evaluating the general managers who draft those players? It's a very much a what have you done for me lately league, and
yeah,
you are expected to draft players that make an immediate impact, even though development is in the back of your mind.
Yeah.
So you have to kind of balance both, because we have a not only an impatient society, but I think the industry has become more impatient than ever. So you are looking for quick strikes.
Yeah.
And I think you have, in the Bears' recent draft class, eight players, you have, I think, you have two guys at the top of the draft that are help immediately guys,
mm-hmm,
and then you have the rest of the draft that are basically developmental draft picks, and you try to have a blend and a balance of both. And then you live with the critiques and the evaluations, and you stand firm to your guiding principles that you take into the draft room and that you form your draft plan. I think Ryan Poles has done a good job of doing that. The only thing, not the only thing, but one of the things that we talked about yesterday is that I don't know that there's been a consistent approach to drafting in the 4 years and drafts that he has pulled off, because
yeah,
it seems like there are attempts to build from the line of scrimmage out, but I don't think there's a consistent premise that he brings into every draft that he has presided over since taking over.
Let me present you with this theory or idea. I guess, don't you feel like there's a general manager has more control over building their roster from the inside out through free agency than they necessarily do with the draft, when you don't really have a power position in the draft? We know Ryan Poles maybe tried to trade up, saw at least kick the tires to see what it would take to get move up in the draft. Didn't feel like it was worth it. So you have to let the draft, to use a very general manager Ryan Poles phrase, you have to let the board speak to you.
Speak to me, board.
Draft me.
Tell me who to take.
Colson speak Loveland says, yeah, it's me, Ryan. Take me. I think when you're looking at the draft, I think to draft best player available and to draft for who you think is going to contribute to your team the quickest based on who's available there at the draft, I think that's impressive. I think it's commendable. I think it's patient. I think it's like trying to trade up and get Rome Odunze last year would not have been wise.
Right.
But he was the best player available there for Ryan Poles at 9 last year, mm-hmm, and that's who he took. Same with Colson Loveland. Were there other needs? Sure, but the best tackles weren't there anymore, and he said, "All right, I'm going to take a player that I think is really going to help."
That's fair enough, and I think it's hard to execute everything you want to execute because so much of drafting is out of your control based on who other teams take,
right,
or what other teams do to trade up to take somebody and select a player that you were coveting. I think the Bears ran into that on Saturday morning when Cam Scataboo yep. was taken by the Giants, and there's some indications that he was somebody the Bears had targeted. They ran into that, frankly, I think in the second round mm-hmm. when the two running backs from Ohio State ended up going before the Bears were on the clock. Yeah. So they didn't move up because maybe they felt like that wasn't going to happen.
Right.
And they wanted to take Trayvon Henderson, as we have been led to believe by some reports. The thing that is that so that you end up from a big picture perspective a day later, or as in this case, 3 days later, looking at the Bears draft haul, and they went from being potentially criticized or challenging how premium of a position was running back, because they're going to trade up five spots to get mm-hmm. Ashton Jeanty, and they're going to maybe overvalue the position in the eyes of some people, to after the draft, not valuing the running back position enough because they waited until 22 other running backs were taken, and your guy, Kyle Manungai, was there from Rutgers in the seventh round. So they were at both ends of the extreme. And so I think then that just is typical of what you get caught up with in the draft. Things are out of your control.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you couldn't pull off the trade to get Ashton Jeanty the way you wanted to.
Yeah.
Or the way we think they wanted to. And then you weren't able to get another running back along the way, even though you wanted to, or we think you wanted to. So you end up with a seventh rounder. And now he's not a plug-and-play guy. Maybe he is, but chances are he's probably not.
Just talking to some people, it feels like the running back position is the hardest to project and how their success will translate to the NFL.
You think so? That's interesting.
That's something I've heard or read, because it depends on their situation they're in. Obviously, Derrick Henry there's only one, you know. If there's a Saquon Barkley, there's one Saquon Barkley, right? Like that's, and maybe Ashton Jeanty would be in that category. But the rest of these guys, it's hard to project how successful they'll be in the NFL. Isaiah Pacheco, a great example, right?
It is a great example. And I think that there's going to be parallels you want to draw. At the same time, he went to the Chiefs. That was falling into a warm nest.
A great situation.
He was nurtured. He mm-hmm. was brought to. He was brought along. He had Patrick Mahomes there. He had Travis Kelce there. He had Joe Tooney blocking for him. You know, he had all the things that you would want from a seventh round pick. Now maybe the Bears have some of those built in advantages too.
Mm-hmm.
They're just harder to buy into because they're unproven, because they've never played together before. But the Bear offense is one that if I were a seventh round draft pick out of Rutgers, I'm glad that I'm falling into.
Absolutely. And I think
that's a good point, Ruthie.
Yeah. And just speaking with someone who's really familiar with the Rutgers program, basically this was a guy who was going to be the top undrafted free agent running back that was going to go somewhere. If he were 2 inches taller, someone told me, he would have been gone in the second through fourth rounds. So I just think there's a lot of upside.
How about 2 steps faster? Isn't that the knock on him, that he can't necessarily run away from people?
Yeah, but is that the running back that the Bears are craving right now, or do they need sort of that bowling ball?
They need a downhill runner.
Yeah.
They need the guy who's going to be the Manungai. Yes, they want him. They want Kyle Manungai to be the guy. And competes for carries. I think that's asking a lot.
Yeah.
I think that's asking a lot of somebody you drafted. So bring him along, develop him at his rate, and be happy with what you get. And he's always there for depth, because you need depth.
I understand the Roschon Johnson conversation has sort of gone this direction. I get it. Are people forgetting about Ian Wheeler, who the Bears
they are.
loved last training camp?
We just got a text, 708. What about Ian Wheeler?
Okay. Wow.
Good call.
Oh my gosh, 708.
How about that?
You're getting my brain. Ian Wheeler was someone that the Bears were very high on
mm-hmm.
and was competing with Velus Jones, right? To be the running
back. That's true.
Okay. Bad comparison there. But Ian Wheeler is somebody, remember, that in Hard Knocks was getting pushed and pushed and pushed and coached very hard. And I'm excited to see what Eric Bieniemy.
You just love Eric Bieniemy.
I Okay, so
you just love Eric Bieniemy.
It's hard not to.
I know.
After you watched my interview with Eric Bieniemy.
I saw your sit down. It was great. It was a great sit down.
He is captivating.
You had a moment.
We had a moment. He's a hard-nosed coach, but he's also one of those guys that you want to listen to.
Yeah.
I mean, when he speaks, you listen. And it just feels like Ian Wheeler has the personality. Based on what we saw from Hard Knocks, he is the personality that's going to take on to that.
I think this happens every year with draft classes, but I think especially this year with the first-time head coach. You look at these players. After Colston Loveland and Luther Burden III, I don't think that the Bears drafted somebody who they can immediately count on to win games this year. They look like developmental projects, and they're trusting their coaching staff. Possibly.
Shamar Turner, I'm excited about.
Yeah, I think possibly. But I think with him, there's the question of him making the transition from outside to inside at the NFL level, not just the SEC. The injury past is something that I think you've got to get past that hurdle. But you're also you're relying on your coaching staff to get the most out of him. Mm-hmm. And while you do that every year, first-time staffs that come together, I think there's almost it seems like the Bears are really trusting their coaches to get the most out of these players. And I look at Luther Burden III. He's coming in with a lot of baggage, frankly. He has the attitude, I don't say accusations, but there's a cloud surrounding him that isn't necessarily good. There aren't good vibes. And so they're trusting Antoine Randle-El to get the most out of him and be firm and hold him accountable, because no block, no rock, as Dustin likes to say and repeat. So, and the same thing goes with the running back class. You just mentioned Eric Bieniemy. Why do you have trust in Kyle Manungai as a 7th-round pick? Partly because you trust Eric Bieniemy to get the most out of him. I do think head coaches trust their staffs, but I think
you better trust your staff. Otherwise, you get fired. I mean, those are the guys that you're depending on to help you be the best coach you can be. I think every coach is counting on their coaches. Every head coach is counting on their assistants to make them better. And I don't know. There does feel like there is a very strong belief that this staff is going to get the most out of this roster.
Well, the opinions are flying, and that's always a part of the deal around the NFL on the Monday following the draft. Whether you're in Chicago or Boston or even Buffalo, which brings us to, we have to listen to this because this was hilarious. On Monday, out in Buffalo on WGR Sports Radio 550, Brandon Bean, the general manager there, highly accomplished general manager. Would you say that he's been?
Oh, yeah.
He's one of the guys.
Kidding?
The Bills are one of the teams that you can count on to be at the top of the AFC East in the playoffs and in the Josh Allen era. Highly successful. They haven't won a Super Bowl. That's certainly on the list of things that I think Brandon Bean wants to do before he leaves. But he was waiting to come on WGR to talk about the draft. And while he waited, he heard some things that he wanted to comment on once he had the microphone.
Listen to the last few minutes of your show before I came on, waiting on here.
All right.
Sounds like 2018 all over with you guys.
Well, we're very – how so?
Well, you guys were bitching in 2018 about Josh Allen. You guys wanted Josh Rosen, and now you guys are bitching that we don't have a receiver. I don't get it. Like, we just – hold on, let me talk. Scored 30 points in a row for 8 straight games. A year ago, I get you guys asking why we didn't have receivers, but I don't understand it now. You just saw us lead the league in points when you add all the postseason. No one scored more points than the Buffalo Bills, including the Super Bowl champions. So you just saw us do it without Stephon Diggs, same group. How is this group not better than last year's group? Like, I don't – like, our job is to score points and win games. Where do we need to get better? Defense. We did that. So I get it. You got to have a show, and you got to have something to bitch about. But bitching about wide receiver is one of the dumbest arguments I've heard.
Brandon Bean, general manager for the Bills. So I think that's refreshing.
Him. Yeah, good for him. I love sort of that. That was in Buffalo radio.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just love when executives or coaches defend themselves, because like it's sort of.
And that's a bad look in the eyes of some people. That you can come off as too defensive.
I honestly thought it was saying to him, to the radio host, it's like, You guys don't know what you're talking about.
Well, that is exactly what he was
which
saying.
Which is a little condescending, which is fair. But I don't think it's necessarily defensive.
Though, but if you're an executive, though, whether you're in Chicago or Buffalo, when you hear the amount of the number of opinions that are expressed on how you do your job on a regular basis, if you pay attention to them or if you expose yourself to them, and I guess he didn't have any choice, he was on hold, wouldn't it be hard not to be defensive or even aggressive in defending yourself if you have that opportunity? I think it takes incredible restraint if you're Ryan Poles, if you're Jed Hoyer, Chris Getz, Carter Hawkins, name them all. You could go through the list. AK, Arturis Karnišovas. You know, these guys, if they wanted to be combative, they could be combative. And we certainly have had our share of combative personalities who have been running teams in Chicago. I'm surprised we don't get more of that. I would welcome Ryan Poles to have a lively back and forth to that degree, defending his draft class to people right. who think he only got two starters when he needed four.
Right. I think it probably comes with confidence and experience and success, right? I think it's hard to be defensive in a way that you actually feel like you're defending your case, because Brandon Bean, I don't think, is concerned about his job security in this moment.
He's not.
Built this roster that has had success, that scored the most points in the league last year, that he had all the number, he had this
okay.
the facts.
But you're right. He is a successful GM. He has, I think, the latitude to do that. How would you have felt and how would it have gone over if Ryan Poles came on the score on Monday, or the flagship if he wants mm-hmm. to, and said, you guys don't get it. You know how hard it is to draft a running back? We were trying to do it. We were trying to draft a running back. You guys don't get it. And how? And we were, you know, we had three offensive tackles off the board at 10. What did you want us to do? We took the best player available. I mean, if he had that tone,
sure.
If he had our tone in defending himself as aggressively as we critique what he did,
uh-huh.
I don't think it would go over very well. Some people would accuse him of lacking professionalism. Even though the candor would be welcome, I'm not sure the tone would be.
It would be entertaining, but I hear you that on the picture it paints. But with that being said, maybe if Ryan Poles came on and said, let me explain to you what it's like in the war room and all the calls we're trying to make to try and get Trayvon
okay.
Anderson.
Good, good.
You know?
Try that. If you're Ryan Poles,
yeah.
try that. So
we're
tell me how hard
up.
It is.
We're yeah. trying to get a feel. We're trying to see if if we can get up because we want Trayvon Henderson. Oh, sure enough, he's gone off the board. Now what do you want me to do?
Draft a running back. Draft the next best available
but
running back.
But if I think there's a player ahead of him.
Why didn't you take a left tackle? Don't you need a left tackle? Don't you need a running back, a left tackle, and
we
a edge
Ozzie.
Rusher? You didn't get Ozzie yet. You still haven't drafted in the second round.
Right.
You, there's always going to be a counter argument. There's always going yeah. to be a back and forth. I think we need more of that, but I don't think that there are executives who feel that kind of conviction
yeah.
or feel that kind of job security even. But,
right. It comes, again, it comes with success, I think. And I think you're only really able to do that if you have success.
Well,
and
that's the thing that I'm curious
like
most.
Like if Ryan Poles said to you, he said, David, do you know how far we've come? Like, do you know how, when I got here, how much we've improved? I think you would look at him and you would say, Ryan, you won 5 games last
exactly
year.
Exactly what I'd
right.
say.
So,
yes.
So there are two sides to every story, and he can maybe sit there and explain to you, well, this is my job as the general manager to build the roster on paper. It's then the coaches that have to get the most out of it. I don't know.
From
I'm
a broader
just playing
perspective,
devil's advocate
no,
here.
I think that's true, and I think that's a good point. I'm most curious about how Ben Johnson's going to handle that part of the job.
Yeah.
Because right now, he's all bluster, he's all confidence, and he's all charisma. And we love it. And it's great. And I love seeing him rocking in his chair and talking about cooking with hot grease and talking to these guys and all of the ways that he is describing what he's about to accomplish and how there's no depth chart. I'm sold. I'm sold on Ben Johnson and what he's capable of doing and how he sounds, and he has already elevated the conversation. I am most curious about how he handles the first bout with adversity.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's coming.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's coming.
Oh, yeah.
You are not an assistant coach in Detroit anymore. You're not a play caller for the most dynamic offense in football any longer.
Mm-hmm.
You are the head coach of the Chicago Bears in a city that is dying for success, mm-hmm. starve for success. And they want you to be the reason why you experience that. So how will that go the first time when his jokes may not land? And not only on his players, but in to the public, to the fan base.
Right. And it does feel like he's very open and transparent, and he's challenging people very publicly with us. You wonder how much of that gets taken away with adversity. How much of his transparency comes away with adversity.
She's Ruthie Polinsky. She's in for Mully today. We've got a big show ahead. Brian Cole, Bill O'Brien, Dan Wiederer, Mike Florio, and John Heyman. This is Mully and Hobb. When we come back, it's the Pick 6 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
It's Pick 6 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. Pick 6 with Mully and Hall starts now.
The Bears drafted 8 players over the weekend, so how many of them can you project starting in the Bears playoff game? Playoffs, and when might that be?
Okay, so I think this is the way you got to look at every draft, and maybe the way that Ryan Poles and his staff would look at this one. Because you're drafting guys, as I said before the draft, you're going in and you want, ideally you went into this draft wanting 3 or 4 starters and envisioning those guys to be starters on the team that won a NFC championship at Soldier Field on the way to a Super Bowl, and they would be starting in a Super Bowl. And I look at this list of draft picks, and that's what I was looking at. I was trying to envision, could I see Shamar Turner starting for the Bears defensive line in a Super Bowl? And I just don't know that I do. I want to, and I know that's probably, but I think he's a depth piece on a pretty good defensive line. Ozzie Trapillo, well, is he going to be starting in my mind as I envision this Super Bowl caliber?
When are they in the Super Bowl?
Well, if they're doing it right, 3 years. If you're in the playoffs, 2 years. You're going to have a winning record next year. That's the progression. You got to look at this as a 3 to 5 year plan. You got your rookie contract to take advantage of in the next 3 to 5 years. I really believe that Colston Loveland could be a starter on a playoff team. Mm-hmm. I think that Luther Burden III could be a Pro Bowl caliber player on a playoff team in 3 years or so. Two years or so. He's on that trajectory. And that's it, gang. I want to see more. I do. And if Ryan Poles were to call in and we'd put him on hold and he'd be listening to this, he'd be ticked off. Because I want to see more than 2 starters on a playoff team. And maybe I'm underestimating Ozzie Trapillo. And I think that our guy Clave Harbor told us on the Pro Football Show, big Pro Football Show yesterday, that Ozzie Trapillo's got good tape and he's got a bright future. And I hope that that is right. I just don't know what side of the ball he's going to play on. So that makes projections harder to come by. But I'm saying 2 starters and you're in the playoffs in 2 years. And beyond that, I think sounds a little bit overly optimistic.
Well, yesterday we also predicted how many games the Bears would win next year. We always like to laugh at my predictions. So I had them at 10.
Dustin.
And that was yesterday.
Hold on. You were going on and on yesterday about the schedule. It's so hard. It's such a hard schedule, especially on the road and the division. Bah, bah, bah. It's such a hard schedule. I got 10 wins.
That was
Dustin,
great.
What?
That was great.
They're going undefeated at home.
They won 5 games last year.
It's going to be a slog. I only got him at 10. Oh, my gosh.
So there will be 2 starters next year in the wild card game when they're playing in the playoffs. 2. Both they'll be in 2 tight end set. No 12 personnel. They'll be in 2 tight end set. So Colston Loveland will be considered a starter opposite his guy Cole Kmet, and Luther Burden III, I think, immediately starts for the Bears if you want to get into starting at the slot position. So 2 starters this fall, winter, when the Bears are playing in the wild card game.
Ooh, okay.
Okay.
The Bears drafted 8 players. Of the 8 players, I think you first have to answer this question and say, when are they going to the playoffs?
What's your answer?
My answer is, It better be next year. Not this upcoming season. Not this upcoming season. Okay. It better be the next year. Because with what Ben Johnson wants to do, with Caleb Williams' projection as the number one overall pick, you better make the playoffs not this year, but next year.
Yeah.
And if you make it this year, holy smokes, here we go. Okay? If in 2 years, right, let's say at the end of the next, not next season, the next season, four of those players could be starting. The top four. I think Colson Loveland and Luther Burden were all there. Ozzie Trapillo, what is the future of Braxton Jones? Is Ozzie Trapillo going to be better on the left side, or is Ozzie Trapillo maybe a really good right tackle and you could maybe try moving Darnell Wright to the left side?
Well, that's what I wonder.
Maybe.
Is Ozzie Trapillo a better right tackle than Braxton Jones?
We're going to find out. And Shamar Turner, mm-hmm. I'm high on this guy. I like the way he describes the way he plays. I like using the word violent when you talk about a defensive tackle. And I think his upside is really high. He's got to rein it in a teensy, teensy bit. Because we don't want any penalties, but I like Shamar Turner. I have four of the Bears' 8 picks starting.
Okay.
And maybe Kyle Manungai.
Oh, that would be good. That'd be a great story.
The second question, 100%.
All right, moving on to the second question. How do you think the Bears' second-round draft pick, Ozzie Trapillo, fits in best? Something we'll ask his Boston College head coach, Bill O'Brien, at 7:45. And if you had to make an educated guess, how will the Bears' offensive line line up in week number one?
I think Braxton Jones is your starting left tackle week one.
Thank you, doctor.
That's my projection. He's going to be ready for training camp, right? They say he's going to be
ready. Was that a question mark or exclamation point?
I think he's going to be ready for the season, is what I've heard.
Okay.
I think Braxton Jones is your left tackle week one. How long he stays there will be to be determined. I think Ozzie Trapillo is right now going to be a very good potential backup swing tackle for you. He has experience playing on the left side. Clay Harbor said he watched Ozzie play left tackle at the Senior Bowl. He played on both sides of the offensive line, and he said he looked, you know, good. He said he looked good there. We'll find out more, obviously, as we watch him throughout the spring and the summer. But this guy is going to get a lot of reps, as Ben Johnson said, because Braxton Jones is not going to be participating in the spring. So you're going to know what you have in Ozzie Trapillo before week one. I still believe Braxton Jones is your starting left tackle week one.
Well, if you believe in the four-letter network's NFL depth charts, and I know we had Ben Johnson saying that right now that there is no depth chart except other than QB1. Basically, everybody's fighting for a position. Okay, Ben. But very interesting. So we're just going to read what the four-letter network has. For left tackle, Braxton Jones, Joe Tooney as the left guard, Drew Dahlman as the center, Jonah Jackson as the right guard. I think the interior is no doubt, unless there's an injury, obviously, those are your three starters. But according to the four-letter network, Chicago Bears NFL depth chart as of 6:10 on the 29th day of April, Ozzie Trapillo is your starting right tackle, and Darnell Wright is backing him up.
Wow. Wait a second. I thought you were going to tell me that Darnell Wright was on the left side.
No. That's what the four-letter network has. So Darnell Wright has found himself a seat on the bench.
That's definitely a mistake by somebody.
He was arguably their best offensive player last year.
Correct. Like, so it's very interesting. Here's the question. I want to know, is the NFL now drafting tackles and saying, okay, tackle is a premium position, so we're drafting you for the premium position? And I think in today's NFL, right tackle is just as valuable as left tackle. They move guys all over. There is no more that I am a right defensive end or I am a left defensive end. They move the linemen all over the place. So it's not that left tackle and the blind side and that whole thing. I think that ship has sailed. But I wonder now if tackles are becoming failed tackles are now starting guards.
Well, not at 6'8", 330, you're not, I don't think.
Well,
I don't think you're a 6'8 guard.
If you're not pulling a bunch, if you're not pulling a bunch, maybe the center's doing the pulling.
If you ever sit behind somebody who's 6'8", that's like Caleb Williams' view of downfield if you have a 6'8 guard.
Well, here's why I'm asking. Here's why I'm bringing this up, because of Karan Amagaji.
Oh,
so now we've got, but I mean, do the Bears are investing two high round picks in two swing tackles? I'm just saying.
I agree with
that.
Are
one of those guys, are one of those two guys eventually going to replace Joe Tooney and then eventually replace the right guard,
Jonah Jackson?
Well, I don't think. Luke Newman.
Maybe Luke Newman. I doubt that the sixth round pick would do that. I think it's too early to talk about Jonah Jackson's replacement. Yeah. But Joe Tooney is probably in line for an extension. Then you'll get a better idea about when he'll be replaced.
And how long of an extension?
I think probably two or three years, perhaps. Yeah. But I think when you talk about...
I'm just curious about that.
The offensive line, if Ben Johnson truly believes that there are no jobs that have been assigned or awarded yet, and his depth chart is blank, then I would consider strongly moving Darnell Wright to the left side. Braxton Jones isn't going to be ready until the season, and if all this chemistry and these reps matter in the offseason as much as they do to first-year head coaches and first-year staffs as they come together, I'd be very curious to know why you wouldn't move Darnell Wright to the left tackle if he is your most talented offensive lineman.
He's been so good on the right side. Don't you think that he's been playing in the NFL for 2 years on the right side? You want to just... Don't fix it if it ain't broke.
If you're telling me the offensive line isn't broken, I'm going to show you some game tape that begs to differ. I think that you do have somebody who can play capably on the right side, but if your offensive line is better with him at left tackle and you drafted somebody in the second round to play right tackle, who is a right tackle, then if those are your best five, and we always hear the best five will play, then I think that's the way you would want to go into your off-season portion of the program.
So Ryan Poles left that door open.
He did leave that open. So I'm not convinced that he wouldn't be better on the right side as a starter. Move Darnell Wright to the left side and see how that looks just for the off-season. If that doesn't work, then when Braxton Jones gets healthy, Braxton Jones can be your left tackle, and you move Darnell Wright back to the right side. So interesting combination. But if I were to say right now, week one, probably the safest way to go is Braxton Jones will be in the lineup, even though I would probably try other options up until that point.
Yeah. Next question.
What was your lasting impression of new Bears tight end Colston Loveland, who made his first appearance Friday at Hallis Hall? What are reasonable expectations for Loveland in terms of his role in the Bears offense and overall catches? Can you rank the Bears weapons?
Okay, so I love this story about Colston Loveland. It's worth revisiting. We haven't heard Ruthie's take on it on the radio yet. I love the whole small-town kid comes to big city and tries to make things work. I love that narrative. He's also as humble as you could find for a first-round draft pick, and he's all about work ethic. I think there's a lot to like about Colston Loveland, and I think he's going to be a dynamic addition to the passing game. Realistically, 60 catches. 60 catches is a realistic target for Colston Loveland. And 60 catches, and what would that be, about 750, 800 yards? I think he should be a threat in the red zone, 6 to 8 touchdowns. I want to see him be a big part of this passing game. How big? Well, if you're starting to rank targets, DJ Moore's got to be your number one. As long as he's here, he's your number one. I know there's no depth chart, but there is a pecking order, and he's at the top of it. I think Roma Dunze deservedly is number two. Colston Loveland is number three. Luther Burden III is number four. And then Cole Kmet is the fifth option in the passing game. And those are your weapons. DeAndre Swift ranks in there somewhere, but I think he's part of your running game. And the running back to be named later might be after that.
Boy, this is really an interesting debate. We don't consider Caleb Williams a weapon, right?
No,
it's what he's playing with.
He's the point guard.
It's his hand. It's his hand of cards. You know, David, I think if the Bears are going to be a 10-win team, like I predicted, maybe even 11, if I get really crazy, DeAndre Swift's got to be a much bigger weapon. You got him like six. You've got Loveland ahead of him, didn't you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
I think from a DJ Moore is supposed to be that guy, and we like DJ Moore a ton. But I think like Luther Burden III might be, I'm kind of drinking the Kool-Aid on this guy. Like he might be the guy because these other people are covered and he's a matchup nightmare potentially. Same thing with the number 10 pick. I think 45 catches for Loveland?
I'd be disappointed in 45.
Well, there's so many options. I mean,
they're going to run more plays. They're going to have more. Here's the other reason.
I think Ben Johnson's not lying to us. I think he wants to run the ball a little bit more. So I think about 45 catches for the first year. That wouldn't be a bad thing. As long as they're winning, I don't care, right? But I think they're all in like this pocket. But I think the guy who's going to be better than a lot of people think. I am high on Luther Burden III.
I am high on Colson Loveland. My lasting impression for Colson Loveland, obviously I'm a Michigan grad. Everyone knows by now. I love this guy. I am so excited that he's a Bear. No one really predicted that he would go before Tyler Warren, except maybe us on the Big Pro Football Show.
Yes, we did.
I mean, hello, watch us. Okay, it's a really, really exciting pick. This is a no-nonsense, small-town kid, salt of the earth. Honestly, went from the small town to the big house. He went to the big house, and he was a star. And he was a huge part of that national championship run. And I love that he battled through injury and
Brandon,
a down Michigan
Brandon,
year.
Can we some hail to the victors in the background, please?
Yeah, please. It'll get me going. I am very, very excited that Colson Loveland is a Bear. I also want to make sure that I make this very clear.
Okay.
I think he is going to make Cole Kmet better. Will that mean that Cole Kmet is going to have more catches? I only have 90 seconds to do this.
Time.
No, I think Cole Kmet is going. This is going to open up opportunities for Cole Kmet. I think it's going to push him. I think it's going to make him better. I don't think he's necessarily going to have more targets, more catches, but I think he's going to be a very, very good player. And I think the two of them are going to be incredibly dynamic. I have a lot to say here because I did a little research, guys. Do you know what Sam Laporta, what his rookie year looked like?
What it looked like?
He had 1,000 snaps his rookie year, 86 catches his rookie year, 10 touchdowns.
Yikes!
And he was in 84% of the offensive snaps.
Dustin, would you like to redo your prediction?
I think that Colson Loveland should have 70% of that.
Okay.
Because I think there are so many weapons for this Bears team, mm-hmm. and I think we're going to learn a lot about Colson Loveland as a blocker as well. That being said, here's my ranking of the weapons.
Okay.
DJ Moore, you're number one.
Yep.
It's got to be your number one.
Right.
Roma Dunze, number two. Colson Loveland is number three. I have Cole Kmet as number four.
I like that.
Luther Burden, you're a rookie. I think you're going to have opportunities, but I think you're five. Then I have DeAndre Swift. Last but not least, Kyle Manungai.
You're consistent.
That's this question. You know a lot, obviously.
That is the voice of Connor Bedard. How disappointing is it that the Blackhawks' number one target to be their head coach, David Carlie, say that right?
Carl.
Yep. Of Denver, withdrew from consideration and appears to be staying in college. What now for the Hawks?
Oh, this is me. This is interesting. I think it's very telling that a man who is a winner in college isn't ready and has won in college isn't ready to take that next step, let alone with an iconic NHL Original Six franchise in a beautiful city, one of the greatest hockey towns in the country. That to me is surprising. It's disappointing. If he goes to another NHL team, that's going to be very worrisome because why didn't he want to come here?
Bingo.
Where do they go from here? To me, obviously Mike Sullivan is the Pittsburgh coach.
Whew.
Who was fired. That feels like probably the most qualified name.
That's ambitious.
That's out there.
It's very ambitious.
They agreed to mutually walk away from each other.
Agreed to mutually walk away. Mm-hmm. Parting of ways. We've all heard that one before. Other than that, it's kind of a hodgepodge of other names, right?
Yeah,
I don't know.
It's a hodgepodge.
I want to stay consistent on brand for me. This makes absolutely positively no sense. According to the Google machine, he makes a little bit over $700,000 a year to coach at Denver. I would love to make $700,000 a year, but that's not happening. He would make at least $1 million a year to coach.
Oh,
the
my
Blackhawks,
gosh.
Right?
I know
you've got something to report.
No, I want to be consistent here, but yeah.
But my point is, if he goes to another NHL team, okay, maybe. But that says something about you as an organization that he doesn't. And what does that say about Connor Bedard? Like, are we way over our skis on this guy? Like, wouldn't he want to get connected to one of the top young talents in this league?
One would think.
So what's going on? What is the hang up? And again, if the Blackhawks come to you first, as far as we know, and offer you this opportunity, why would you wait around? Are you afraid? Are you afraid your game doesn't translate to the big boy league to be a pro?
We need to know why David Carl said no. We want to know if he's going to turn down every NHL offer. The offer that the Hawks made to David Carl was lucrative. Trying to nail down specifics, but because I think what I initially was told, if that is the number, it seems very high for somebody who's never coached in the NHL. But let's just say multi-year, multi-million is as far as I want to go right now this morning. But think big. And they were thinking big. And they were swinging big. And I applaud them for it. But they swung and they missed. I don't know why they missed. I don't know if it was just one of those things. You're never going to pry somebody away from a good, comfortable spot. But I do know it doesn't matter. What matters is what they do now. How do they make this job appealing again? How do they make this franchise a destination place for them again? How do they put the gravitas back in hockey operations? Because it's missing. And you can kid yourself that it's there, and you can fool yourself that the Hawks still is an elite destination for a head coach. I don't know that that's true. And if it were, you would have David Carl announcing at a press conference what he plans to do about Connor Bedard and all the talent that is in the pipeline, because there's talent galore. So what does the list look like now? Well, Jay Woodcroft from the Oilers past, he's probably a name you're going to hear a lot. Mike Sullivan would be a home run, but he's probably going to look at the Rangers and maybe even Boston, where he could coach his son-in-law. Rick Tocchet is somebody who is out there. These are names you have heard before, guys who are proven. He's coming from Vancouver. Todd Nelson has some AHL experience. And then if they want to go back to the college route, Jay Pandolfo from Boston U would be worth a look. But Danny Wirtz and Jamie Faulkner have their work cut out for them. And Kyle Davidson has to make this happen. So this is a very good job, and I hope they get a very qualified candidate.
Different question on a different topic.
That is the voice of Mike Florio. He's with you guys at 8:44 this morning. What kind of an impact do you expect Gage Workman to have over on the South Side for the Sox after the Cubs traded the Rule 5 pick for cash considerations? And if you're the White Sox, why not bring up Tim Elko, first baseman, 9 home runs, 23 games, at AAA before tonight's contest?
All right, we've got to get fast at getting through these, but I'll say this. Gage Workman, if he wants to say he wants to beat the Cubs, great. He needs to be motivated to beat everybody. He's an unproven major leaguer, and the Cubs did give him an opportunity before Dustin rolls his eyes again. So, yeah, start him. Play him. Tim Elko, come on up. Get on the next flight from Charlotte to Chicago. Get here before tonight's first pitch against the Brewers, because the Brew Crew is ready to go, and you should be in the lineup. Why are you waiting on a guy who has 9 home runs in 23 games? Get these guys both in the lineup. The Sox are not hitting. They need to hit.
Going Vaughn. Gage, really, Gage? Really, that's your response, is that you're looking forward to beating the Cubs? Look forward to not making an error at third base. Try to win a series over at the rate, okay? Win a series, and then get back to me about how you want to beat the Cubs, Gage Workman.
Gage Workman has been around the Cubs. He's been around a winning culture. That's something I think the White Sox clubhouse could benefit from. I also think they could benefit from bringing up Tim Elko. I saw he's 5 home runs since Thursday.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think it is.
5 home runs since Thursday? What are we waiting for? Man, give the fans that might not be true.
I can double check that. Okay. It might be true.
That would be fun at the rate.
What was the other part of that question?
Voice of John Heyman. He is here at 9 a.m. What are you hoping for as the Cubs take on the Pirates in Pittsburgh? As good as the offense is, who needs to pick it up?
Cubs got to win this series if they want to maintain sort of what they're doing. Who needs to pick it up? Dansby Swanson?
Thank you.
He's batting 181, I think I saw.
Yeah.
Come on, offense. Gotta have it all. All the batters, all the defense, gotta do it all.
Yeah, I'm so glad that we learned about how he oils up his glove and oils up all his teammates' glove as they get away on getaway day or the last. Really?
That's what Ron Washington did.
And does he use that?
That's
same,
what Wash did.
Does he use that same oil in his hair? I know he's got the great locks, great hair. Everybody at my house loves Dansby Swanson's hair.
It's good hair.
So Dansby Swanson needs to pick it up. On our hot and not list on the Fly the W podcast, Michael Bush also made it to the not list, not hot. PCA needs to continue to do what he does so that the afternoon show doesn't call for him to be benched. Put your foot on the throat of this division. As well as the Cubs have done against the toughest schedule in baseball, they're only one game lead over the Reds. The Brewers are now three games back. So go White Sox. And try to win a series, Gage Workman. Go ahead, White Sox. Win the series against the Brewers.
Tim Elko, 5 home runs since Thursday. Good research, Ruthie. She knows her White Sox minor leagues. You must work for CHSN.
You must have seen me on the pre- and post-game show filling in for Chuck with Ozzy.
Right, that's right.
Had a lot of research to do.
Mrs. White Sox over there. All right, so I think that, yes, Dansby Swanson's a good one. I want to see somebody at third base take hold of that job. I want to see John Birdie maybe get a chance. Maybe he can be the guy that steals all the bases and all of they need to answer that question at third base. It is a lingering one. They can go into Pittsburgh. It's a 3-game series. They need to win 2 out of 3. You can't lose series to the Pirates. And you better win the first two. Because if you're seeing Paul Skenes on Thursday night, good luck. Or Thursday afternoon, good luck. Bring it!
I am thrilled that they are facing
Paul Skenes. I am disappointed. I wish they wanted to skip him. Why would you want to face Paul Skenes?
Because those are the types of pitchers you got to learn how to beat, okay?
Yeah, I think exactly after coming out of a series, you lose 2 out of 3. You want to win series. So I think you want to win 2 out of 3. And by the way, 3-1-2, thanks for talking the whole 45 seconds about the White Sox. Come on, that's 45 seconds more than they probably deserve today.
How about the 815? Gage Workman already beat the Cubs 2 or 3 times with his fielding.
You can blame me.
Thank you, Bill and Joliet.
You can blame me for going too long on my Colson Loveland. I went way too long.
That's okay. We are going to come back with the extra point, and Ruthie promises not to go too long on that answer. Here on Mully and Hall, Ruthie Polinsky, and from Mully at Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hail to the victors, valiant. Hail to the conquering heroes.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
What do you make of this take on the Bears' possible running back situation from Cleveland radio station 92.3?
Are we ready to say goodbye to Nick Chubb? A silence came over the room. Are we ready? I'll ask it again.
It seems
are we
like
ready to say goodbye to Nick
like
Chubb?
It seems like it's over.
I got to tell you guys, maybe I shouldn't say it because it's going to kind of cast a pall over the room. I heard he is kind of getting close to another team. It happens to be in the NFC North.
Clarify that?
No. Not any further. All great things got to come to an end. And
why do you think it had to come to an end in this situation, especially this year?
I hope I hope he comes back. I really do hope, but it's looking more and more unlikely that both sides are kind of ready to move on, it seems to me.
Reaction to what we just heard there from Cleveland Radio 92.3.
Sounds like Cleveland Radio's getting ready to say goodbye to Nick Chubb, who has had injury issues. You're concerned about those if you're the Bears or any team in the NFC North. I can't imagine another team in the NFC North being interested in Nick Chubb. The Bears have a running back need, and he is a running back who could be available, who's also putting out videos of himself, I think, on the gram. That he is. Why do you snicker?
That was
why is Ruthie snickering when
on
I say
gram.
The gram? Well, on the gram.
I'm rubbing off on you.
Yeah,
is what
you
I think
yeah,
it is.
So, but he's looks in shape. Whether it's Nick Chubb, whether it's J.K. Dobbins, whether it's Breece Hall, you can insert an accomplished NFL running back who might be on the move. Yes, the Bears should be interested. Yes, the Bears have a need. Yes, they do need to add him to the mix because for this offense to work effectively, most effectively, you need a dual threat at running back. And right now, with apologies to Kyle Manungai, who might be that guy, he isn't yet. and he hasn't proven himself yet. Let him develop, get a veteran, have the play action running play action passing game working because the running game is a threat. So yes, Nick Chubb on the move. I'd be okay with that because you have to take chances here, and that would be a risk.
Yeah, you need a little thunder, right, to go with some lightning. But the question is, can DeAndre Swift provide the lightning? But like, we don't talk about Roschon Johnson anymore. Why is everybody forgetting about Roschon Johnson? Is this a tell that they don't like Roschon Johnson? Is this a tell that Roschon Johnson is not bouncing back like they had hoped he would bounce back from injury? But yeah, I mean, in Swift and Chubb, they were teammates, weren't they, in the SEC at Georgia?
Ooh.
Weren't they in the same backfield together?
You might be right.
So there's a little bit of that, too. So, I mean, I'm not against it. And this guy, you want to talk about a guy, if you're into squatting, like all you see on him on social media is him going into the rack with 600 pounds on his back.
So he could squat with Ben Johnson?
Oh, yeah. He could, yeah. What is it?
425.
Ass to ankle?
405.
Or ankle to ass? What is it with Ben Johnson?
Yeah.
He said it. I'm just repeating it.
Oh, gosh. For the right price, why not? If you think he's healthy and you think he can contribute and be the guy, then bring him. When you look around and you say he's getting close to a deal with the other NFC North teams, I mean, Lions don't need a running back.
Nope.
Vikings don't need a running back.
Nope.
Green Bay doesn't need a running back.
No.
So, okay. Process of elimination. I think don't forget about Roschon Johnson. Don't forget about Ian Wheeler. And don't sleep on Kyle Manungay.
Don't sleep on Manungay. He might be the guy in time. That would be fun to say.
And I think everyone's rooting for him.
It might be more fun to hear people mispronounce his name for a couple years before
we might be mispronouncing it.
We might be, but I don't think so.
I don't think we are.
I don't think we are. And I think he's actually a very good project and guy you want to develop. But Nick Chubb is somebody who represents the type of help you need immediately. And if this is a running game that's going to function at the highest level, I would imagine Ben Johnson would welcome somebody like that. The connection with DeAndre Swift is one I had overlooked. But yeah, the former Georgia running mates in that backfield would be good to pair it together as NFL runners for the Bears. All right, that is the extra point. When we come back, we've been talking a little bit about Ozzie Trapillo and where he fits best. We'll hear what he has to say about that. Ruthie Polinsky is in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
What's your comfort level on playing right side versus left side? Do you have a preference?
Yeah, no. I would say, you know, if you asked me that during the season, I would obviously say right because that's where I practiced. But as soon as the season ended, you know, going to this level especially, you want to be as versatile as possible. So I've done a ton of work at, you know, all positions except center. So I would just be ready to fill wherever is needed. That's the main goal, right? Get on the field as soon as possible. So that's kind of how I've focused my training these last few months. And, you know, I think I've done a good job with that. So I wouldn't have a preference at the moment.
Have Mully, the Bears given you any indication of where they want to play you?
No, yeah, kind of similar topic. Nothing in specific. Again, I'm a competitor. I'm going to go out there and compete and just try and get on the field as soon as I can and, you know, help out the team.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky's in for Mully. That was Ozzie Trapillo, the Boston College tackle. Offensive tackle. Don't want to say right tackle. Don't want to say left tackle. That was the exact right answer from somebody drafted in the second round who is entering the NFL and just wants to play and doesn't want to limit himself to one side or the other. Position versatility is a huge thing in the NFL. And he made a strong first impression. He's got a lot of upside. So I'll say something nice about the Ryan Poles draft class right now.
Mm.
I haven't been that critical. I really haven't.
No,
that's overstating.
I know.
But the one thing that you can say about the Ryan Poles draft class, I believe that you look at, after hearing from these guys, and even ones with a little bit of an edge with, say, Shamar Turner, who's volatile at times, and even with the guys who have perceived attitude issues like Luther Burden III, this is a high-character class. And Ryan Poles' classes tend to be that way.
He has built high-character rosters in general, which I think is commendable.
Mm-hmm. In free agency and in the draft class, those seem to be priorities
mm-hmm.
because you need to know what you have in a guy or envision what he's going to be like when there is a struggle. And I think that when you talk about Ozzie Trapillo, his background is just real inspiring. And, yeah. and I know there's empathy because he lost his father at the age of three. His father was a Boston College football player as well, an offensive lineman in the NFL as well, teammates with Ryan Poles' father at Boston College. There's a lot of symmetry there organizationally that you like and makes him an easy guy to pull for. You see him, he looks like he's got a baby face yeah. of somebody who's 6'8 and 320 pounds.
Yeah.
And he looks like he's going 12 going on 13.
Yeah.
And so you want to root for somebody like that to succeed. And I do think he could be a big part of this Bears offensive line for years to come. I just don't know where that will be. And I don't think we have to decide yet. And I don't think they know yet. There's still going to be there's uncertainty surrounding Braxton Jones's health. There's uncertainty from the outside on what they want to do with Darnell Wright. But I think Ozzie Tripilla will be a big part of the future, regardless of the side of the ball.
Another Boston College connection for you, Ben Johnson, graduate assistant 2009 to 2010, and he was the tight ends coach in 2011.
I had forgotten that.
I feel like that people are forgetting that, but there's a Boston College love affair going on at Hallis Hall.
There's a vibe. You know who I think the Boston College director of football initiatives? That's a job. That's a job title. You know who that is?
Who?
Josh Beekman. Josh Beekman. Bears fans of a certain age will remember that Josh Beekman was drafted, I believe, in 2008. He was a fourth rounder out of Boston College. He was, I think, a teammate in college. He played at Boston College from 2003 to 2006, so he might have preceded Ryan Poles. He was drafted to replace Olin Krutz, essentially. He was the center that was drafted. We talked to Olin about this on Saturday, and he did play 3 years for the Bears and started at left guard for several years. And I think when you look at his past, he's at Boston College too. My sense is that in the background checking, doing the typical vetting of Ozzie Tripilla, Josh Beekman probably had something to say about his view of Tripillo's future. As would Bill O'Brien. We'll ask him at 7:45.
I can't wait to talk to Bill O'Brien. A lot of positive things about him. You know this. Many know this. I spent 3 years of my career in New England covering the Patriots, covering New England sports. Not really Boston College because I was in Rhode Island, so we focused on the Rhode Island colleges, but we covered all the Boston teams. But the way people talk about Bill O'Brien in that city is, like, he's awesome.
So he's got still a popularity because of his Patriot connection, and that's part of the reason he went back to Boston College after getting fired by the Texans, correct? He was fired.
I think he was fired, yeah.
He was there for a while.
Tough world out there.
Well, he's also very quotable. He's a very media savvy guy that is very...
Personality.
He does have a lot of personality. So looking forward to talking to him. We got a big show ahead. We're going to talk to in the next hour Brian Cole, the surgeon from Rush Midwest Orthopedics, who did the surgery on Gabriel Landeskog and Lonzo Ball. And it was the same procedure, and both of them have made miraculous returns to the court and the ice, respectively. Then Dan Wiederer, Mike Florio, John Heyman, still to talk to. It's going to be a great show today. Ruthie Polinsky is in for Mully. When we come back, what grade did you give the Bears draft?
As Ruthie rolls her eyes.
As Ruthie rolls her eyes, she's still looking at her lesson plan. She's still plotting this out and reviewing the tape. She does not have a grade, but we're going to make her give one anyway. We'll do that and compare that to the rest of the league and what they think of the Bears when we come back. Ruthie Polinsky's in for Mully. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.